Hi, good afternoon. Today, I want to try and talk to you for 10 minutes about Walmart, the American supermarket chain. And before that, though, don't forget, if you click on the link in the description below here, you can find the script for this talk. You can find sample questions, answers, and the MP3. Practice your English. You will get better. I promise you. All right. Oops. 10 minutes about Walmart. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Go. Okay, before we had Walmart, before we had supermarkets, 100, 150 years ago, early shops were much different to they are today. A shop would be small, obviously, and you would have assistants. You wouldn't touch the produce yourself, you would tell the assistant what you want, and they would go and get the things for you. Things were not canned, they were usually loose in bags or baskets or drawers, and you would say to the assistant how much of something you want, and they would weigh it out for you. Shops only sold things that were grown very locally, of course, because there was no way of getting them around. There was no distribution network. You would buy fresh local produce, sometimes dried things, and that would be it. You wouldn't have much choice. Obviously, shops like that, things were not pre-packaged. There was no plastic, of course, back then. It wasn't self-service. The assistants would serve you. It wasn't cheap, obviously, because you're buying a few things. There are not a lot of things being sold, so the price was quite high, and you don't have a lot of choice. You can only choose from the things that are grown locally. And of course, there are no pineapples. Well, it depends where you live. If you lived in America, of course, there were no pineapples, no avocados, nothing from other countries. People would have never even seen a pineapple, probably. Then, of course, 1920s, 1930s, after the First World War finishes, after the Great Depression finishes, canning becomes a big thing. People start to can a lot of things. The ownership of cars starts to take off. Obviously, cars have been around for a long time by here. Well, 40 years by here, but people can't really afford cars until about the 1930s. So the ownership of cars starts to take off. Ships get faster, obviously. Trains get faster. The train network expands. And we have planes that are now much faster and can travel quickly to other countries. What does all that mean? Well, because you can can things, they last a lot longer. And because you have trains, planes, and ships that travel quickly, you can now bring in produce from other countries. You can have international distribution networks. So your small shop will now sell things that it didn't sell before, maybe even avocados. Okay, so the next logical progression from here, 1916, a man called Clarence Sanders, he invents the world's first supermarket. What he does is he buys a big empty building, he puts lots of shelves in it, and he puts the cash desks at the front. It's kind of like a supermarket you know today. People would go up with baskets, they would choose the produce they want, they would come to the front, and they would pay for it at the cash register. Very similar to what we have today, except of course his shop was in the middle of a city. All shops were in towns and cities. That was the done thing. 1930, a man called Michael J. Cullen, he realized that shops didn't have to be in the center of cities anymore. More and more people are owning automobiles, cars, and he realizes that if he puts his supermarket outside of the city, he can get cheaper land and he can get more land. So what he does is he buys a big empty building and he surrounds it with a parking lot, a car park. And because of that, people can now drive out from the city to his supermarket. They can park, they can do a weekly shop, and they can drive back. So 1930, this is really changing the way we shop. Things are starting to shift here. Now, how does a supermarket make its money? Well, basically, they rely on high volume. They rely on a lot of people buying things. They sell things at low prices, and they sell a lot of them. Now, one reason they can sell at low prices is because they're out of town. It's much cheaper to buy land when you're out of the city, of course. If you have cheap rent, a cheap building, you can bring prices down. There are many other ways they reduce prices as well, but basically, they sell things cheaply and they sell a lot of them. 1962, Sam Walton. He sees this idea and thinks, that's a great idea, I can do that. And he starts his first shop, which he calls the Five and Dime. What he does is he combines low prices with a very low profit margin, and that equals a high volume of sales. He looks at other supermarkets and sees that they are still making a profit of a certain percentage on what they're selling, and he thinks, well, I can cut that down. If a supermarket is making a dollar profit on something, and I only make 10 cents profit, I'm going to get more customers. I won't make as much profit on one thing, but if I sell a million of those things, I'm going to make more profit. So here begins the idea behind Walmart. Very cheap prices passed on to the customers, of course, in a very high volume. This is hugely popular. Of course, it's cheap. Lots of people come, and his shops start to take off, and he starts to expand. Now, here's a few dates for you. 1971, they make their first distribution center. They realize that it's cheaper to have things in a local center, sorry, in a national center, and ship them out themselves, rather than have individual companies ship to their individual stores. 1975, they come up with the idea of the greeter. That comes from Korea. Korea and Japan, these countries, when you walk into a shop, you're greeted with a loud greeting. And he liked that idea, and he took that idea, and he introduced it into his shops. So you have the greeters, 1975. 1980, they make $1 billion in a year. 1988, they make their first supercenter. Up until now, they've been basically supermarkets. But 1988, they're supercenters. They sell pretty much everything. Then they start to expand internationally. 1991, Mexico. 1994, Canada. 96, China. 98, UK. 2002, Japan. Now, at this point, they're making a lot of money. 2009, Walmart sells $400 billion worth of things, and it becomes the world's biggest company. On the Forbes 500 list, it's number one. It is the biggest company in the world. 2010, they go to India. 2011, they go to South Africa. Now, they have 11,000 stores around the world in 27 different countries. They employ 2.3 million people. And here, this is a figure that's going to stagger you. It certainly staggered me. They have 200 million customers a week. 200 million people go to shop at a Walmart's every week. That's just a staggering figure. Okay, oh, I've only got 4 minutes. So, there are obviously good and bad things about companies like Walmart. Let's look at the bad things first of all. Walmarts are very cheap. They buy things cheaply, they sell them cheaply, and you can buy cheap things. Walmarts actually saves people a lot of money. A lot of people in America and different countries that don't have much money, they shop at Walmarts and they save a lot of money. So Walmarts is actually working towards poverty. They employ people. Each store of theirs employs about 300 people, plus the infrastructure that grows up around it. They're convenient. You can shop in one building to buy all the things you need. And globalization, of course. Walmart is a big push behind globalization because people in Walmart are buying things made in China. Somebody in China has a job. They might have more money than before. So those are some of the good things. Oh, also, in the Hurricane Katrina, the New Orleans disaster, when the government was in trouble, the government couldn't help these people. Walmart actually utilized its distribution network and sent lots of free food and clothes to the people in New Orleans. I mean, I'm sure it's just a PR stunt, but still, they helped these people by using their distribution networks, which the government themselves couldn't do. Okay, a few bad things. Reliance. We rely on these stores too much. When they actually close down, which they do sometimes, people lose their jobs and whole towns can be destroyed when one Walmart closes. Unfair pay structures. The CEO of Walmart makes $22 million a year. Your average worker makes $12 an hour, obviously. The high street. When a Walmart comes into a town, basically small shops close down because they cannot compete. You don't have to go to individual shops anymore. You can just go to your Walmart and your small mom and pop stores start to close down. Unemployment, when of course these local shops close down, people lose their jobs. People work at Walmarts, but other people lose their jobs as well. And of course, price control. One of the things Walmart is probably most famous for is using its power to push down prices. Say for example, I'm selling clocks to Walmart and it costs me $1 to make a clock. And I say to Walmart, I want to sell this for $1.50. Walmart will say, no, it costs you $1. We'll sell it for $1.10. And if I say, well, no, I can't do that, then Walmart will say, okay, we'll go to another distributor. We'll go and buy it from somewhere else. We won't use you anymore. And I want to access these 200 million people a week. So I'm going to say, okay, I will take $1.10 for this and you can sell it. But then Walmart, year on year, want to bring their prices down. So next year they'll come to me and say, we want it for $1.09 now, $1.08, $1.07. And I cannot do that. And I will reach a point where I cannot make these anymore in my country. So I have to outsource and get them made in China or Vietnam or a cheaper country. So Walmart pushes prices down by using its power. That helps people, of course, but it also hurts people. Talk about that in a second, in 1 minute. Okay, price versus cost. We want cheap things. We all want cheap things. We go and look for cheap deals and we buy things that are cheap. But when we do that, we're not thinking of price versus cost. We're thinking of the price of something, not the cost of it. And in this case, Walmart is both the cure and the disease. So let's look at this. Walmart pushes prices down so much that, say for example, this clock is now $1. You cannot make this clock in America because you have to pay your workers more than the dollar an hour to make these clocks. So you cannot afford to sell them for $1. So you have to outsource to China, where you can pay a worker less and you can afford to make them for $1. But if you do that, of course, jobs are leaving America and going to China, which puts people out of work. If people don't have work, they don't have much money, which means they cannot afford to buy expensive things, so they go and shop at Walmart. They are now buying things cheaply that they used to build, and now they don't have jobs because these things are cheap. Walmart is both the cure and the disease. I almost made it. So it's a kind of a circle, I suppose. Walmart, after decades of expansion, recently started to close a few stores, partly because of Amazon, of course. Amazon is now potentially doing to Walmart what Walmart has done to a lot of other shops. But Walmart is competing. They are buying up online sites left, right, and center, and they're starting to have a much stronger online presence. So Amazon probably won't destroy Walmart, but Walmart will have to change its business idea, its business structure. And that's it. Thank you for listening. I hope you understood that. If you have any questions or comments or ideas for things you'd like me to talk about, please put them in the comments section below here. Don't forget, if you click on the link down there, you can read the script for this. You can find some questions, multiple choice and essay type, and you can find some answers, and you can listen to the MP3 of this as well. If you liked it, click like. If you want to subscribe, please subscribe, and you can listen to these talks every week when I make them. Thank you. Have a nice day. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.